only way our country will progress in the next 25 years towards our 100th year of independence is if there are enough and more founders building great institutions. I think it was pretty clear that I had to do something which was around pushing the envelope of people's purpose.
Welcome to Backstage with Millionaires, the show where we bring you the stories of real Indian startups told by the entrepreneurs that built them. I'm Caleb Friesen, and on the show today, why Rajiv Srivatsa walked away from Urban Ladder to build Antler India, one of the fastest growing early stage investment platforms in the country. So Urban Ladder's success is in part a result of a pre-product investment. See, Kalari Capital poured $1 million into this company, Rajiv Srivatsa's first startup, back in August of 2012. But he and his co-founder, Ashish Goel, had been waiting for these funds for more than 6 months. They had a brilliant idea and a website, but it was only after this external capital hit their bank account that they were actually able to buy inventory and hire employees. In other words, if Kalari hadn't taken that early stage bet, then Urban Ladder may have actually died before it even started. And today, these are the kinds of bets that Rajiv is taking at Antler India. He and his co-founder Nitin Sharma are investing in early-stage Indian startups aiming to go global. And many of these portfolio companies are pre-revenue, pre-product, and sometimes even pre-co-founder. These are individual entrepreneurs with big ideas, but they need capital to go from zero to one, the same way that Urban Ladder did before Kalari Capital decided to back them. However, 8 years after that first $1 million seed round, Reliance acquired 96% of the company for just 182 crore rupees. That's a sixth of the startup's peak valuation. A bear market and then COVID-19 meant that Urban Ladder wasn't able to raise the funds that they needed to target an IPO like they'd planned. And so Rajiv actually ended up walking away from the startup that he'd spent more than 8 years of his life building.
So the Reliance deal actually happened in November 2020, and I had moved out by October 2019, right? So a year before. And when I moved out, that was certainly not in the wings. I think COVID really hit us hard, and that deal needed to happen at that particular point in time post-COVID. So when I moved out, it was just a complete fresh slate, right? In terms of, I think, 7+ years of being a founder had made me realize what my strengths were, what my weaknesses were, and what are the things I enjoy, what are the things I don't. And I think Urban Ladder had been built to a point where there needed to be a different kind of a focus and a different kind of a team, because we had become far more omnichannel, far more offline. And my heart was in technology, building a brand, building people, really scaling things up on the people front and the brand front. And I think that opportunity, while we had seen a bit of the peak of it between 2016 and 2018, had sort of waned after 2019. So it just made sense for getting the right team at that time, which it was, and then moving on to something else, right? So that sort of was in the transition for almost a year before. That's was the sequence of events that happened before I actually moved out of Urban Ladder, and a year before actually the Reliance acquisition happened. When people turn 40, I think there's a lot of things that go in their head. And I think I had between 2016, August, around the, I think it's Amrish of Pine Labs who says people undergo the most transition between 38 and 42. And for me, exactly between 38 and 42, as if it was like the definition of midlife, there was a lot of transitions, both in personal life and in professional life. And somewhere when I kept questioning my own purpose, right, midlife crisis, I think it was pretty clear that I had to do something which was around pushing the envelope of people's purpose, right? People's happiness, people's potential. And it's sort of, the tail end of it, and I'll explain in a bit, became Antler, right?
Sure. It must have been, in a way, very liberating to kind of move on. Like, I've experienced that myself. I've moved around the world a lot in my life. And every time you leave a place, it's bittersweet. It's like, I'm so excited to start the next chapter, but I'm also sad to say goodbye. And like, you must have spent so long to building it, and you put so much of yourself into it. Probably it had changed quite a bit towards the end as compared to the early days when you're, as you said, building a team, building new and exciting products. And that sort of the whole, your whole career has been like that, right? From Infosys to Cognizant to Yahoo, where you're always building new things. And sort of like, once that innovation sort of starts to subside, you move on, right? So that happened at Urban Ladder as well. You moved on and had this moment where I think it was like about a six-month period where you were just kind of figuring out what to do next. Tell me a little bit about that time period. Did you feel, were you excited? Were you feeling like a little insecure? Like, what was your state at that point?
I think it was all of those emotions. I think when you've, for me, Urban Ladder was almost 2x my previous maximum experience, right? And as a founder, I guess that's still maybe lesser than what it could have been. But I would say after 8 years of doing Urban Ladder, I think it was pretty clear as to what I was. When I say what I was, what my passion areas were, what my strength areas were, where I saw the world going, right? And I think that I was clear. But if you say that you're going to have a very clear, you know, bare bones from which you're starting, you should not eliminate anything at the start. So when I, you know, this was October 2019 when I moved out, I think I went about it like any other left-brained would do, which is just go about it, talk to people, understand what's the ecosystem, where are the needs, where are the gaps. I did all of that. And I think I started by eliminating. So at the start, everything other than VC was on the table, right? But I think what quickly happened was I started eliminating. I said, it's very different and very difficult once you've been a founder to be part of a big corporate and be doing something. So I eliminated the whole corporate route very quickly. I also eliminated late-stage startups. You know, there was a bunch of startup options that came my way, very senior roles in unicorns. And while I liked the founders, while I liked the mission, it was very difficult to adjust to both a founder energy as well as a culture of a startup, right? Especially when it's set in stone, when you've done something of your own. So I immediately eliminated that. As I said, VC was not even an option at that time. I had eliminated VC saying 40 to 50, I'm not going to be investing, I'm going to be building, right? So I had eliminated that even before corporate and late stage startup. Then there were opportunities of being a CEO of a bunch of early stage startups, which also came my way. There I sort of realized that if you don't have passion for that space, one was in gaming, one was in healthcare. And if you don't have passion for that space on an everyday basis that you wake up to, you can't do it, right? You can't do it for 5-10 years. So I sort of had good conversations, but I also eliminated that. Now I was left with pretty much two things. One is start my own startup, which was one sort of thought process, or do something more freelance for around 18, 24 months and then figure life out. Now, which is where I started off. I put it on LinkedIn saying, hey, I'm free. I'm going to just, so this was, I think, around November, December of 2019. Before the COVID, you know, pandemic hit. And I just put it up saying, I'm free, you know, let me just explore, right? Around, I think, some 100 people pinged, and 70, 80 of them very interesting early stage founders. So this just so happened, right? Early stage founders seemed like, okay, you know, you've done a startup, so maybe there's something of use. And I met a bunch of them, at least an hour or 2 hours spent with a lot of them. That gave me a lot of passion. That gave me a lot of energy, right? Beyond anything, any other conversation I had had during that 6 months. And I figured, okay, I want to do something with early stage founders. And this was, I think, through Jan and February of 2020. So this was more a discovery process. I didn't know what it was going to be. What I think it became clear was it can't be just as an advisor, just as a, you know, because early stage founders got a lot of advice from a lot of people. It had to be some kind of a stake in the ground, which means that I either pair up with someone or I invest in someone. I had never invested before, right? So investing was not at that point in time something that I could think of, right? So I met...
At that stage, though, you presumably had some money, right? Reliance hadn't acquired...
No, and Reliance hadn't acquired...
So whatever your savings were, that's all you would have been able to invest if you were doing it on your own, right? As an angel.
Absolutely. See, today, Series A founders get liquidity and start becoming angel investors and get onto, you know, platforms. And I see so many people at Series A and B being investors. That was not the mindset. That was not even a setup for people who started in the 2012 time period. Because that was not something that you would think of, right? That's a very new phenomenon. That's a very 2020, 2021 phenomenon. So we were just like any other, just building Urban Ladder, right? So I would say that is something that just occurred to me, that if you're doing something early stage, you either be a founder or you be an investor. There is no other two ways to it, right? Of course, you can be an angel investor, but then you're doing something else. It's your day job, right? So that's sort of what, at least by February or March, it became very clear that you had to be one of those two. I was also jamming on the side with someone who I really respected on the tech side to see if there are ideas that we could build. And then COVID hit, right? I was also talking to a bunch of VCs who were very extremely interested in having me on the board. And I had sort of looked at it, very prominent VCs, saying that, hey, you know, this is not something that I might look at, right? But really what prompted it for them is they wanted someone who was an operator and a startup founder to be part of them. Those conversations are also progressing pretty well. But then COVID hit and everyone got busy with their portfolio. Everyone got busy with just salvaging startups. And that is coincidentally the time when Antler pinged me on LinkedIn, you know, just out of the blue, right? So that's sort of at least the six-month process of getting to what it would be.
Hmm. Did you already know someone at Antler, or did they just see your LinkedIn post and they reached out and said, hey, you're available, why don't you come and work with us?
I had no clue who Antler was. No one knew anything about Antler. No one knew anything about me. They just reached out. You know, Prerna from Antler, who headed recruitment at that time, actually just reached out to me and connected me with the co-founders. And from there, it was just literally a week before the lockdown, national lockdown here happened.
Okay. And a little bit of context for people who are watching that haven't heard about Antler. It's a Singapore-based VC firm. And they have locations around the world. So it's teams like you and your co-founder, Nitin, who sort of start a local sort of fund focusing on that ecosystem. Right?
So a little bit of context on Antler. Of course, Antler was started by the gentleman called Magnus, who happens to be the batchmate of Mark Zuckerberg and Eduardo Saverin. And Eduardo Saverin became one of the investors into Antler because of that. And Magnus, having been a consultant, having had a phenomenal background, he actually ran a global fashion group company. And having seen the scale of doing something global, but doing something global a bit decentralized, I think he sort of got onto the best of that company as well as the best of McKinsey and decided to build this globally decentralized venture capital firm. And Magnus' vision was to really democratize entrepreneurship, to help very smart people become great founders and help in that journey from day zero, right? So that was the start and the genesis of Antler, because Magnus was based out of Singapore. He started this in Singapore.
And this was in 2018, right?
This was around 2018, 2017, late 2018, literally out of paper plan alone. And then he got his co-founders, Vegard and Fritjof, and UC, who heads Singapore, and Dylan, and a bunch of these folks he got together. And Bede, who, you know, headed Australia. All of these folks had been operators. All of these folks had built companies. And I think what he saw, which was two very different things, right? One, he said he's going to go after people and really go after very smart people in all of these different countries where entrepreneurship has really not taken off. And the seed of that thought is to say, you know, developed countries, the only way countries are going to move forward is if startups and founders really change that ecosystem, right? So he wanted to build the first truly global VC ecosystem in the whole world, right? Of course, there are VCs who are global, but the scale at which Antler operates today, there is not one single platform, one single VC, one single company that has so many different countries, right? We are in 25 different cities. So that was, I think, a phenomenal thing. And the second part he said was, we will do this decentralized. And decentralized is extremely important because you want to get the smartest person in that country and let them run that country the way they feel because of their knowledge, right? And I think that was a super exciting thing for both me and Nitin. The last thing is to say that I will start this journey with you even before you become a founder. I think that's the other thing, right? Most VCs usually start with, you know, people after they are clear of which idea, after they're clear of which space, and once they become a founder. Antler's whole mission is to say, we will help you. We will actually help in this journey of being from employee to entrepreneur and help you at that stage. So I think these are the two, three things that he did really differently and really well. And, you know, at the stage at which I came on board Antler, it was a two-year-old company with hardly any data, hardly any capital raised, hardly any success stories. So it felt like being part of a global startup. Right. And I think that was a huge part for me and Nitin to actually come on board, to say that, hey, this is something that we can build together. This is not something that you're joining after 10 years, 20 years, where something is set. So a lot of the decentralization helped, a lot of being very, very early stage, even as Antler, as the organization helped.
Even you've described Antler India as a startup in and of itself, right? Within the larger startup of Antler Global, which would have made it much more attractive for you, I think, and Nitin, as opposed to some of the other offers that you had been getting from VC firms saying, hey, why don't you join us as a partner or as an employee? And you're like, you guys have been around for a while. I'm just going to be like a cog in that machine, right? Whereas Antler, you kind of get to build it yourself from scratch with the autonomy that they give you guys.
Absolutely. I think this sort of married those three things, right? Which is, one, I wanted to have a founder journey again, right? Two, I wanted to work with people and trustworthy people and just build something which involved people, right? And the best part of an early stage VC is, or a platform, is that you involve people and founders, right? Third is, I've never done something global. And for me, this decade or this part of the journey, I felt I wanted to do something global. Of course, in Cognizant and Infosys and Yahoo, I had a lot of global exposure, and but just that it was all still emerging markets or India, right? And the delivery of it was India. Same with Urban Ladder, right? While we had global ambitions, it never sort of fully fructified. So I would say that this was the sort of the triad that came together. And I think, over the course of the conversations with Antler and with Nitin during those 6-9 months, it just made it clearer and clearer that I think the combination of the three of us could be extremely interesting to start an institution in India.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, you just mentioned Nitin there, and I wanted to know, was it you who was already in touch with Nitin, or Antler was kind of said to you, Rajiv, hey, we've already been in touch with Nitin, why don't you guys team up? Like, what was the story there? How did you guys all, the three of you co-founders, right, Antler being one of them, how did that story evolve?
So funnily, the single biggest product that Antler today in the globe is famous for is this thing called the residency, which in India we started last year. And the purpose of the residency is to help you find your own co-founder, right? And that's what Antler did with me and Nitin, right? So Antler had actually already started talking to Nitin, and they really like Nitin, they really like me. And Nitin was doing his first principal, so he needed some more time to actually come on board. So the three of us started talking together around June, after, when I came officially on board. And during those 6 months, it just became super clear that the combination of the three of us with three very distinct skills, which is the platform, and me and Nitin started talking in a way that it would have been me and Nitin to start up something, right? Even if Antler was not on board. But the good part is, I think the three of us bring such unique, distinct value that it just made sense for us to team up to bring that global platform, which is what... And since Nitin had also talked to a lot of the Antler folks, and I had also talked, we really loved the team and the culture and the mission. And it just made sense to build Antler together in India in a way that India has its own unique characteristics, but at the same time, I think it would contribute back to the global Antler, and we could take on global roles over the next 5-10 years. I think that was sort of the set of conversations we had between, I would say, June 2020 and December 2020. And officially, with Nitin coming on board post his first principles experiences, we launched Antler in India in 2021 January.
Okay. 2021 January. That word launch, there's so much to it that is happening behind the scenes. So I'd love for you to walk me through, especially given that you guys are starting this thing from scratch, obviously under the sort of leadership and guidance of Antler Global, but I'm really curious to know what is involved in starting a VC firm from scratch? Like, obviously there's the first thing is capital. You need capital to deploy, right? Is that the thing that you start with, like going out to LPs and sort of raising money for your fund? Or is it reaching out to early stage founders? Like what's the process there?
So one of my, frameworks, which I have now realized after many years of both building as well as building a VC firm, is founders have exactly 5 tasks that their time gets spread on. It could be you, it could be me, it could be some new founder. The first one is everything around capital. If there's no capital, you can't build institutions, right? Second is everything around customers. Whoever is your customer, for us, the customer is the founder. For furniture, the customer is the end customer. For SaaS, the customer is an enterprise. So you need to be on top of what customers want. Otherwise, you are building, just complete crap. Third is around team. If you don't have a team that can, be built culturally the same way that you would want to build an institution, you can never build big institutions, right? Fourth is just ability to build product and ability to take it to market. So product and market is the thing, right? Because at the end of the day, it could be a service offering, it could be a VC firm, it could be a tech product. At the end of the day, you have to build something and take it to market. The fifth is just networking the ecosystem and ability to spread this in the ecosystem, right? Because if other people don't say good things about you, you're not toast, right? So every single founder spends his or her time across these 5 aspects. Now, sometimes 1 spike, sometimes 2 spikes, even in a week, even after you launch a particular company, it's always across these 5 aspects, right? So when someone asks me, in a regular week, it's 20% across all of these 5 heads. It's very simple. So at the start, we went about the process exactly like how you would launch an MVP of anything, right? We talked to customers. We did the largest survey possible. Because of our own social networks, we we just put it out on LinkedIn and Twitter in November 2020, right? What do early stage founders really want? Is it capital? Is it co-founders? Is it technology help? Is it go-to-market help? Is it ideation? What is it that founders really want? We were lucky that it got picked up and 1,200 founders responded. 1,200 founders. I don't think there's been any survey that's done with so many founders in this whole country, right? We also obviously had the power of our networks and we established the first 2-3 team members very early, right? So there was Kathy who was working with Nitin, who was a founder herself. There was Nandini, who was my first hire at Urban Ladder, who had done a YC startup, who was in between right after the startup had to be shut down post-COVID. So we had Kathy, we had Nandini, and we got Rahul on board. So the team of the five of us went about strategizing, went about talking to customers, hundreds of founders, did this research, had to raise capital from scratch, right? And the capital story is also interesting. It was our first believer was Vijay Shekhar Sharma from Paytm. And it was a 9-minute phone call that I did. And he was like, yeah, this just makes sense for India as an ecosystem. And he's someone who has very strong conviction on something. So he came on as the first investor. And the way Antler is set up is 75% of the capital is raised like you are a founder, right? It is locally raised, right? So, so I would say that it is actually absolutely no different from starting a startup. Every single, I remembered my first 18 months at Urban Ladder. It was exactly as exciting, as ambiguous, as MVP thinking, as, just all the excitement and the adrenaline of the first 18 months of Urban Ladder, Antler, very similar, right? So this is sort of all the stuff that we did in those 6 months to get our first investors on board, get the first team members on board, literally get the first space on board. Shraddha of Your Story is a very good friend. So I just, I had the first launch interview with Shraddha of Your Story. And she said, hey, why don't you just work out of here? Because it's just one or two of you. So first office space.
Indiranagar.
Yeah, it was Indiranagar, the Your Story office. And really, I think, the first 6 months pre-launch is all the adrenaline excitement, right? All the disagreements, we should start with this, we should start with that. But I think over those 6 months, we got strong conviction on where at least we would get started. The funny part is over the next 9 months, we figured out the market moved so much that we had to sort of completely rehash the product the product has been rehashed quite distinctively over the last 2 years. But I would say the first 6 months were a lot of excitement to just get this started.
Yeah. You talk about the product and you also mentioned the customer. So I'm curious to know, okay, the product would be sort of the streams that you take entrepreneurs through, like the residency, the fellowship, and then the sort of like whatever else doesn't fit into those two buckets would be maybe the third stream. This is what I'm guessing. And then the customer would be, I thought it would be like the LPs or like the investors into the fund, but I think the way you're thinking of it is more as the entrepreneur themselves are the customer in a way.
Yes. The vision for an organization is always set by the end customer. There are always a lot of stakeholders, right? There are LPs, there are VCs, there are a lot of other stakeholders that we have to obviously engage with. But the customer is the core customer, which is the founder for us, right? At the end of the day, this is all about helping great people become great founders and or working with great founders who are already started up, right? For us, I think that was pretty clear right from day one. But when you poll founders and early stage founders, based on their backgrounds, their needs are very different. So you could wear very different hats. For example, founder backgrounds, in the next 10 years, it all starts with the hypothesis of saying, okay, in the next 10 years, if there are going to be 300 to 500 unicorns that are created in India, right? Because at the end of the day, we are a venture capital platform, right? So it's not about anyone and everyone becoming founders. It's about people who are building for hyperscale, right? That's the industry we are in. So we have to wear that hat on top of just being a founder hat. So you put that hat and you say, okay, maybe 10 to 15% of them will be college founders. Maybe 15-20% of them will not already know their co-founder or should be pairing up with someone who is much smarter in the ecosystem. Maybe 20% of them will be building on Web3. Maybe 30% of them will be building global businesses from day one. I think you lay out a few hypotheses because at the end of the day, not everything is set in stone or you don't know all the data, right? The moment you're very clear, then you overlay that on top of what are the needs that these founders have, right? The college founder's needs will be very different from someone who's a first-time founder, very different from someone who's a second-time founder. Their knowledge bases are very different. Their networks are very different. Third, the sectoral, someone building in SaaS wants a first client. Someone building in D2C wants go-to-market much faster and supply chain, which is much faster. So even in early stage, the founder needs are so different. The customer needs are so different. You can't solve all of it. Everyone wants capital. That's very clear, right? But you can't, you know, of course, you have a lot of capital and you're doing a third or the fourth fund or you have $1 billion. You can go give everyone capital, a lot of capital. So people come to you for capital. But that was not the game you can play as a fledgling startup in that space, right? So the moment you wear those hats and the moment you do this customer segmentation, you realize that you have to take certain calls in terms of what your first product is, your MVP is, and go about it launching it in the market. So that's precisely what we did to say that, okay, the founder at that early stage needed a bunch of capital. They needed some level of handholding. And this was, of course, our hypothesis in end 2020, early 21. By the time we hit 2022, some of that had completely fundamentally changed because I think 21, 22, those 18 months was it was a seminal period in the Indian startup ecosystem, right? Too many things changed. Too much capital came. Founders became very mature, but too many people started becoming founders. And it just fundamentally changed things. And of course, we also changed with the times. But at least at that point in time, we said, okay, founders needed a platform to take them global. Founders needed capital. And the third thing was founders needed some level of basic early strategizing to help them figure out what is their launch plan. And this is what we launched with, to say that people who are about to build, people who have already started building, and people who have already launched, all three kinds of people, come to us and we'll figure out and maybe pick 20 of you to work with for the next 1.5-2 months. And then get on to funding some of you. So this is sort of what the starting product was. And of course, as I said, that matured over time. But really, the moment you wear and understand that founders have to be segmented across so many different axes, there are a variety of things you can do with those early stage founders. And it's each of it requires a particular product. So whenever I say a product is something which is valuable to some customer and they can step shift their behavior or life because of usage of your product, right? And that's what we're trying to build at Antler. We understand that in the next 10 years, we have to be the number one port of call for people who are becoming founders, which means that if founders in that very early stage have different needs, we will come at it from very different angles and have a suite of products. So Antler, we imagine as more a platform with a suite of products than a VC firm. A VC firm provides capital and tries to be of value add in a variety of ways. We're a platform. We're a platform that has to be relevant to founders. And tomorrow's founders might be very different from today's founders. So we have to adapt ourselves. And, you know, that's the only way you can build a platform, a global platform at that.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that a little later on, sort of adapting yourself to the founders that you're interacting with. But I also want to understand, like, this was your first time being an investor, your first time actually working with early stage founders. Did you find it difficult to go from wearing the founder hat, building Urban Ladder? Yes, you're working with people like employees and you're leading teams and all, you're giving advice or leadership. But do you ever find in the early days of Antler India that you were a little bit maybe out of your depth or the learnings were too much that you felt a little bit overwhelmed? Or was it pretty, you're kind of like, you know, just comfortable?
The only universal thing as a founder and as an investor is I always feel out of depth. It's almost like the Hulk always feeling angry, right? You just don't show it as much. So I think the out of depth is bound to happen in an industry which has so many smart people or in a team which has so many smart people, right? So there are so many people in the team who have so many better insights than me. There are so many founders who will always have so many better insights than me. So I would say I am very, aware of being out of depth and that's going to happen. I think the biggest, for me, the cushion was that Nitin had been doing this for many years. So he has been investing for 12 to 15 years before. So a lot of the learnings I could accelerate based on his learnings. Two, I think as a founder, you come in with a certain set of, features or certain set of skills, and you're also able to sort of adapt and learn on the fly. But I think the bigger thing that shook me up was, I think, the change between 2020-21 and 2022. I think that whole ecosystem change was probably the one that I don't think any of us were sort of able to predict, right?
Yeah, you sort of picked a hell of a time to get into VC in India.
Yes.
Things have changed a lot. I think based on the interviews that I've listened to you give before, there's a couple of different sectors that you guys have been, you know, mainly focused on, like climate is one of them. You've also looked at, I think, health tech or like solving solutions in the health space. Web3 is something that you guys have looked at as well. Maybe just walk me through some of the domains or the spaces that you guys are looking at today.
Sure. So I think the good part about Antler and as a platform at the very early stage is we want to work with great people who have the potential to build great institutions. A lot of them we know will not end up there because of the nature of the venture world, but that's the core at which we operate always, right? So we don't take a sectoral hat, we don't take a thematic hat, at least as of today, right? The angle of Web3 climate as well as SaaS just turned out that our single biggest strength is our ability to go global. We have 700 plus investments across the globe, right? So if we can use our global portfolio, if we can use the global reach that we have, where can we impact the most? And that just turned out obviously for people who are building global from India, which means that it's Web3, it's climate, and it's SaaS. So that's the derivative more than the sort of the very conscious strategy. And today, maybe probably 60-70% of the companies fall into at least building from India for the world in our portfolio, right? We have 30 plus companies, and I would say 20 plus of them are building from India for the world. Of course, we have also done India companies because at the end of the day, if you want to create foundational impact, absolutely you should for India companies too. I think that is the hat we wear more than a very specific sectoral hat. In that process, of course, if we see that these are the sectors where there's a lot of coverage of founders coming to Antler, then we also build our own expertise. We also build our own team strengths there. So that's the hat at least we wear.
Yeah. India building for the world. I think that's something I've heard you speak about in the past as well. And it's something that I think is really special about Antler is that founders who are a part of Antler portfolio startups kind of gain access to this ecosystem, this network where because Antler is located in multiple countries, they can actually connect with founders that are building similar things, but maybe at a later stage. Like for example, mental health, right? Might have been a little bit slow to pick up in India, whereas in the US, it might have been something that happened earlier on, right? People were taking notice of it earlier than they did in India, which I think is great. But I also wonder, I feel like sometimes this is just a trend that I've noticed being in startups in India for a while now, is that it's often sort of Indian startups are looking outside to see what other people are doing first and then sort of building solutions that fit the Indian market. But I don't want to say, like, I don't want to use the word copying because it's not, but it's sort of like, okay, this is an innovation that we're seeing in another country. Let's find a way to make it fit the Indian market. And that works really well a lot of the time. But what's stopping Indian founders from being the trendsetters, like the ones that say the United States or Israel or Singapore, like that they're looking at India and saying, oh, like, look at what those guys are doing. Let's copy them.
I think it's just a function of time. It's nothing else, right? Because I think the Indian startup ecosystem, you can pretty much count, it's almost like 12, 13 years old, right? 2007 was probably when the startup ecosystem really started. And today, and that's one of the biggest shifts we have seen in the 21-22, right? The 21-22 time period, I keep talking about the shifts. I think it's not just about capital. It's not just about the number of institutions, not just about the number of founders. I think confidence levels of founders to actually try some of this way more has certainly increased. And you will see that this decade, that more founders are going after global markets from day one. And that's not just SaaS, that's other sectors too. And two, you'll also see founders come at it more confidently to make global acquisitions. And some of those trend setting has been happening in the last 2-3 years, right? In terms of even Indian companies doing global acquisitions, of course, at much later stage. So I would say it's a function of the ecosystem and the age of the ecosystem and the maturity of the founders and the confidence of the founders. Today, maybe out of the 100 unicorns, maybe there are 10, 15 of them that are global. But I wouldn't be surprised if the next 300, 400, we have at least 30, 40% of them global from day one, not as an afterthought. And the way you build product is very different if you're global from day one. So I would say just a function of time. And we've also seen that trend line, right? In terms of Web3 companies, the nature of building some of these platforms, you have to be global from day one. You can't do it as an afterthought. Your competition is global. A lot of data infrastructure companies, a lot of the companies on vertical SaaS, these are all global from day one. You know, one of our own portfolio companies, Bookie, is solving something for gyms in the US. Now, this guy who started it, Vistar, he actually started it as a product for gyms in India. built for 2 years. It just didn't work. Completely changed the product, completely changed the angle of selling, and is now building it for gyms in the US. And there's a bunch of other companies, you know, whether that's auto, whether that's insurance, whether that's travel, whether that's a bunch of these sectors which are so much more mature in the US. I'm sure Indians with experience there are going to start building products for those particular sectors, right? Because it's just a humongous amount of capital that's left to be unearthed there.
So you, now you're in your 40s. And I think at that stage in life, a lot of people, there's this sort of this trend that we see, maybe not in VC or in entrepreneurship, but outside of that, people start to get set in their ways. They start to just look at the world. They're not as flexible mentally, right? To think about things from different perspectives. Whereas you, I think, have to be that way, right? You're working in early stage startups, investing in them and seeing founders who are pitching you these ideas that might oftentimes seem really bizarre and, you know, it's totally new to you. And but rather than saying, you know what, that's not for me, you actually consider these ideas that they're proposing. How do you stay flexible? I mean, how do you incorporate that into your workflow as an investor? Or is it something that just happens automatically for you?
I don't know if it happens automatically. Maybe at some level, yes, because I think, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, all the life experiences have made me far more flexible. But I think this is an industry that dichotomy always exists, right? One is you have to be so open and flexible and adaptive because smart founders can come change the world, right? So, you know, today market size might determine X billion, but a smart founder can come and make it 100X, right? And you have to bet on that founder. This is one of those industries that has to be very flexible, but also is very judgmental, right? It's very perceptive based on data patterns. So this founder cannot build a venture capital founders. See, the advantage this industry has is you can get it wrong so many times and still make a killing as a venture capital platform because you just need to get it right very few times, right? If you get it wrong all the time, then you're not an industry or you're not even a company. If you get it wrong, or if you get it right all the times, then this is probably not the right industry you are in because then you're not taking enough bets. You can, you know, build scalable businesses, but this is not that industry too, right? So this is an industry that allows you to get it wrong many times. So which essentially means that you should, I think, as a process, take bigger bets, take bolder bets, but somewhere manage that whole portfolio construction in a way that it allows you to de-risk some of it. And which is why venture as an industry is a very power law industry. There are some firms which have done phenomenally well. There are some companies which are in the middling range. And the whole game is to see if you can be an outlier, right? So it's hard work. It's hard work like building any other company. With a lot of competition, a lot of unknowns, a lot of availability of capital, but you don't know whether you're putting capital to the right use. And time is a big, big factor in this industry. You don't know if you're successful. You have certain proxies, but you really don't know if you're successful until you're 5-6 years. You know, that was for me the biggest shift mentally I had to make, right? From being a founder who can see stuff every quarter or every 2 quarters to say that here, fine, you can do stuff in a quarter or 2 quarters, but you don't know if it's successful or not. So, I think time will tell that over the next 5-7 years, whether we are fully, fully successful.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be a long journey for you and for Nitin and for your portfolio startups. How do you, I mean, I know that you have previously approached things from a 4 to 5 year season outlook, right? Most of your previous roles have been that length of time. Urban Ladder was a bit of an outlier, right? It was, I think, 7 to 8 years that you were there. What are you thinking about Antler Indie? I mean, you're already almost 3 years into this journey. Soon it'll be 4, then 5. I mean, do you think you'll stay with Antler into the extended future? Or are you also thinking about what's next at this point? I don't know. I mean,
this question has some 3-4 layers of answers which have to be mixed. So may take a long time to explain, but I'll come at it from 3-4 cuts, right? One is, as a human being, all of us will be working till 60 or 70. So there is something or the other, which intellectually I personally will be doing for the next 15, 20 years at the minimum, right? There's no retirement concept for at least this generation because you don't want your mind to just stay, right? Doing nothing. It'll just, like any other muscle, get killed, right? So you'll probably be doing something till you realize that you want to just get spiritual or something, which is 25 years away. Two, us as a country and us, for me, I've always been in India, and I've been someone who has always believed, and, you know, one of those rare ones from IIT Madras who did not go abroad, who has always wanted to progress for the country, right? And the only way our country will progress in the next 25 years towards our 100th year of independence is if there are enough and more founders building great institutions, because capitalism is the only way, right? While government has the best of intentions, it just is, in a country like this, not the best way for progress, right? So if you have to do something on work, and two, if you believe founders and entrepreneurship is the only way to progress a nation, three, you then overlay your own passions. And I think at the start of the conversation, I told you there are only three areas that I am really passionate about. Everything else is sort of an overlay on it. One is around startups and founders. Everything around startups, founders, and that sort of essentially means investing. Two is happiness and human happiness, and that's around relationships, health, wealth, all of that. Third is potential careers. Can smart people really build great careers and career maps? All of my interest areas is hovering around exactly these three spaces, right? Now, there may be, you know, one-off things like AR, VR, for example, I'm super kicked about. There may be mental wellness, I track a bit more. But really, beyond that, I think it all boils down to these three areas. Now, if you boil this down, and then there's a fourth layer, which is all humans have one or two strong personality types out of four personalities. An intuitor, a thinker, a sensor, and a feeler. An intuitor is someone who is very heavily on ideas, brainstorming, is just really charismatic, talks well, and, you know, is just always high on ideas. A thinker is someone who is very structured, who is a bit left brain, rational, you know, pros, cons. A feeler is someone who is very strong on people, trusts people, builds people. A sensor is someone who moves along things. In a career, when you're building so many things as a founder, you usually can mask yourself well enough that you're strong on each of these four. But as a professional, as an individual, you usually are strong on two and weak on two, right? Me, I'm an intuitor and a thinker, right? That's my foundational predominant personalities, which means I'm always high on ideas, which means that I always get bored very fast, right? Now, this is the only industry that allows me to not get bored quickly, because it's an industry of ideas, right? If you overlay all the four different answers together, it essentially means that this is one industry, one setup, one chance where I do not get bored even for 10 or 20 years, right? Because there's a very visionary, missionary angle to building all of this. There is a very specific impact angle. And at the end of the day, of course, success in this is based on whether you're giving enough returns to your shareholders, whether you have enough unicorns, all of that stuff, which I said is going to take 5-7 years. So I just overlay all of this to say this is the only thing and the right thing that I would be doing. There's nothing else that I'd be doing in this universe. So that's what prompts me to say that this could be a much, much longer journey than anything else.
Sure. That's really interesting to hear because, you know, before joining Antler and building Antler India, you were pretty much set that I'm not going to be an investor. Whereas now you're like, I love being an investor. Like, this is what I want to do with my life.
See, I'm someone a bit more philosophical, and I also understand the dichotomy of all things, right? You talked about Urban Ladder earlier, and you talked about Antler. I don't get attached to institutions. And I believe my daughter is 10 years old. You know, a lot of people say, ha, this is like another kid, or, you know, your startup is like your kid and stuff. I'm extremely passionate about what I do, but at the same time, I'm extremely disconnected, and I can be the other extreme to also say, you're building an institution to last beyond your time. And that's the only reason why you should build an institution. Otherwise, don't build an institution, right? It should be in a far better shape. It should be a great institution which creates impact for millions way beyond your time. That's true of Urban Ladder. That's true of any product. The first time I realized it was actually the intranet I built at my B school, IIM Bangalore, right? And this was 2003, around the same year Facebook got started, right? And there was no Facebook in IIM Bangalore. It was only for all the US institutions. So I built something personally, individually, inside IIMB, which stood for 10 years after I went, right? I named it, I built it, I coded it. For me, when I had to come off it, because after 2 years, you graduate, right? I think that was the first time I realized that it has to stand beyond you. And at some point, it might die and something will, be better than it, right? Because someone later on is not going to build it with the same passion as you. So that's why there's a life cycle to everything, right? There's death also. I think that and just all the experience of the last 4 years has made me enough philosophical to be dispassionate also about things. And it's the same with Antler or same with any institution, right? Some of it might be successful, some of it might not. You do any particular moment, and this is where I'll use a bunch of the One Life Theory philosophy. At the end of the day, everything in the past has no relevance. Everything in the future is unpredictable. It's this moment, this conversation I'm having, I should have full focus. There's no point in worrying about anything else right at this point. When I go build Antler after this conversation, I will focus on that. When I'm spending time with my daughter, I'll focus on that. And beyond that, success or failure, you know, is something that you just can't predict. You want everything to succeed, but there's going to be failure. Even the, you know, I love this quote that Tom Hanks, I think, in a conversation with a bunch of these actors said, assume nothing will last. If you're super successful right now, assume tomorrow you're going to fail. If you're in the abyss, if you're absolutely in the, you know, death knell of something, assume tomorrow things will be better. It's the same philosophy I use for everything. Just solve a problem, build something. At the end of the day, success or failure, shoot for it. Don't get attached to one or the other. Don't get attached to the institution also that you build. So I know it's ending on a note of philosophy, but I very deeply believe all this.
That was Rajiv Srivatsa, co-founder of Urban Ladder and Antler India. And a little known fact about Rajiv, he actually went to Burning Man back in 2018.
I went to Burning Man around my 40th birthday, just a month around, and exactly actually in August. And I think it was sort of a cleanse in a way, right? To say that, okay, this journey is over, both on a personal front as well as on a professional front. Let me go back and figure out what on the professional front. It's very difficult to explain Burning Man to people who have not been. So I think the night before, it almost felt like one of those Star Wars movies where you go to see these planets where there are different kinds of beings. I think it just felt like that. That is probably one of the craziest experiences, with everyone in the middle of the desert, in the darkness, lit up with, you know, just artificial stuff that's around them on their body, and the whole of the place coming to life because of that. That was quite a scene.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to the show this week, and I'll see you in the next one.